You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Well, it's Wednesday, and you know that means it's time to talk our state's history. Tomorrow marks 75 years since the largest land and water invasion in history, D-Day. On June 6, 1944, we're going to focus in on two soldiers among the 160,000-some Allied troops part of the D-Day invasion, two Michigan soldiers who served in the 101st Airborne Division, the Screaming Eagles. Rachel Clark of the Michigan History Center is here with us. So, Rachel, who is the first paratrooper we're going to talk about?
The first one we're going to talk about is Staff Sergeant Charles Staub, originally from Detroit, Michigan. He later lives in Birmingham. He was 21 years old when he enlisted and 24 years old on D-Day.
You know, so many of those men who invaded Normandy were kids. Some of them just passed their high school proms when you stop and you think how young they were. So tell me about his service. What did he do in the 101st Airborne?
So he enlisted in 1941, very soon after the United States became involved in the war. And after enlisting, he received training at Chanute Army Airfield in Illinois, and he went to meteorology school. Meteorologists then and today are crucial to any combat mission. And so as D-Day neared, Allied leaders needed those accurate weather reports, and he became a weatherman.
So as a weatherman with the airborne, we have to remember our history. It was the airborne troops, the 82nd and the 101st. They were the ones dropping into Normandy, like in the very, very early, early hours of June 6th, if anybody watched Band of Brothers. We saw what that was like. So they were there before the beach landing. So he was a combat weatherman. What was his mission? What was he tasked with doing?
His mission was to drop in ahead of the enemy lines very, very early, as you said, and get as much weather information and intel as he possibly could to report back to Allied leaders. That weather intel was going to determine those landings. D-Day was a massive combat mission, both land and air, and these weather reports were absolutely crucial. And they had to be very quick, and they had to be as accurate as possible.
So there they were, dropping behind those enemy lines in the middle of the night, the early, early hours, and things got very, very scattered and confused for those paratroopers. We, again, citing Band of Brothers, you saw what it's like and how scattered everything got. How did things go for Staff Sergeant Staub?
He landed and met up with other regiments, but they were very quickly attacked by German soldiers. So Sergeant Staub was wounded by rifle fire in three spots, and he suffered a concussion from a grenade. He ended up having to kind of hunker down with some of the other Allied soldiers until other Allied troops came to rescue them, essentially.
And how long did that take? How long were they hunkered down and hiding?
It was a few days. It took a little while because they were so far inland. It took time by the time Allied soldiers landed at the beaches and then were able to start marching in. It took a few days, I think between 5 and 7 days, if I remember correctly.
So you stop and you think he had a concussion and he was wounded in three places. And there they were hiding from the Nazis and hoping not to be found until their friendly troops could find them. Was that injury the end of the war for Charles Staub?
It was the end of the war for him, but not his military service. So he served in the weather service and continued in the Air Force and eventually was in the weather service for the Korean War and served with distinction.
And what about the rest of his life then after he left the military? What do we know?
So he remained in the military until the early to mid-60s. He retired. He married. He had a family. He traveled. He ended up at Bunker Hill Air Force Base, which is now Grissom Air Reserve in Kokomo, Indiana. And then, as I said, he retired in 1963.
And do we know, is he still alive today?
He is not. There are a couple different reports of when he died. The nearest I can see is that he died in Traverse City in 1980, but there's another report that he lived up until 2006.
And we have to underpin this whole conversation with the understanding that we are losing hundreds of our World War II vets every single day. And now we want to focus on a second Michigander, and like Charles Staub, also a member of the 502nd Parachute Infantry Regiment, PIR, of the 101st Airborne. Who are we going to talk about?
This time we're going to talk about Lieutenant Wallace Strobel from Saginaw, Michigan.
And everybody stop and think, one of the most iconic photographs from D-Day is this photo of General Eisenhower meeting with paratroopers before they climbed into those C-47 transport planes to fly to Normandy. And there the troopers are, covered with their black camouflage paint. They've got the helmets on, the gear is strapped on, and Ike is talking to one tall trooper at the center of this photo. I have seen this photo a million times, and you're saying that tall trooper was Wallace Strobel of Michigan?
He is. He's a very young man at that time as well. He was only about 22 years old in that photograph.
How do we know that's him?
There is actually quite a few historic records that go along with that photo, including Strobel's, his own account of that photo being taken. They were in England and preparing for their mission into D-Day, and Eisenhower showed up and he was talking to people, and he had to have been terrified on so many different levels, not only because he's going into combat, but because then, you know, General Eisenhower shows up and
the Supreme Commander is chatting with you.
Yeah, and starts chatting with him. And apparently he asked him where he was from, and he said Michigan. And the story is that Eisenhower said, "Good fishing there."
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So how did the drop go for Lieutenant Strobel?
Let me just give a little bit of background on him. He was Michigan National Guard initially, and then that was federalized to the 32nd Red Arrow. And he volunteered for paratrooper duty and wound up with the 101st. So he dropped behind enemy lines again early that morning of June 6th. And it was a successful mission for him. And he ended up coming out of that alive.
Do we know anything about how the rest of the war went? Because, again, back to Band of Brothers, which was focused on a regiment of the 101st Airborne, that group fought all the way to the end of the war and helped to liberate Hitler's Berchtesgaden. So did Wallace Strobel follow that path through Holland and fighting through France and into Germany?
As far as I can see, yes. He did remain with them, and he came out the other side as unscathed as anybody did.
What did he do after the war?
He returned to Saginaw. He married his high school sweetheart, and he became a successful businessman, and he stayed there.
Is he still with us, or did he pass?
He passed away. He passed away in 1999, and he is buried in Arlington Cemetery with his wife.
What can you tell us, Rachel, about how many Michiganders served in World War II, and do we have a sense of how many never came home?
Michigan's numbers, I don't know how they compare to other states. To me, it looks just enormous. So between non-military and military personnel, you have about 1 million people that contributed to the war effort. We had just over 613,000 military that served. 10,263 died, and nearly 30,000 were wounded. As I said, I don't know what that compares to other states, but those numbers just seem astronomical to me.
It is an incredible effort that the nation came together, and certainly something to remember as we are on the eve of the 75th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. Rachel Clark, Michigan History Center, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.